Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, nice to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing fine.
Good, good.
We're not going to talk about Iran today.
No, I thought we were.
maybe indirectly. It will always come up, it seems. But I'd like to talk about something that we're keeping our fingers crossed. Maybe it's something good to talk about, and that's some peace talks going on.
Yeah.
And it's about time, is all I got to say. You know, it's 18 years ago, we decided to save the world by invading Afghanistan. At the time, or at least after that, I wondered why we went in Afghanistan, since 15 out of the 19 were from Saudi Arabia, yeah. And we were sending them more weapons.
Yeah.
But anyway, they've been fighting a long time. We've been involved, and there's a lot of proxy fighting going on. But the talks now are important because it involves two groups within Afghanistan, mm-hmm. that really own the country, okay. And that is the Taliban versus the government. The government, of course, at the present time is really our government. But at least they're talking because there's been a lot of fighting and killing. I often wonder that some of these prolonged wars come to an end just out of clear exhaustion.
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody wins and they run out of money or something else happens. But this has gone on a long time. But this history has been well known, that the people of Afghanistan, certainly the Taliban, represents at the grassroots a lot of the characteristics of the Afghan people. And they don't capitulate easily. So there's talks going on in Garda right now between the two groups, the Taliban and also the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the government out of Kabul. So this is a good sign, but they've been talking about it for a long time. I think they got a little bit of a hint because Trump has made some bold statements. Bringing the troops home. But there's always, we worry about the qualifications for bringing them home. But at least it's like we're tired fighting, we're tired killing, and I think Trump's heart is in that direction. So he's moving in that direction. So that's encouraged these people. Well, if the Americans are really going to reduce their militarism here, we should be talking about, coming together as a people. And so that's been going on for a couple days. And maybe something good will come of this.
Yeah, it was on the 7th and 8th of July. So just this week, the intra-Afghan peace conference in Doha. Interestingly, as you point out, it was organized in Qatar, but it was organized by Germany. So the U.S. didn't really have any role in getting these two together, probably important symbolically, but it was kind of a broad conference, including civil society, women's groups. So it wasn't just government-to-government talks. But it's significant because, you know, they tried to do something back in April to get the two together for the first time, the U.S.-backed government and the Taliban, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't agree on the size of the delegation. They're bickering and fighting, so they said, just forget it. So this is the first time they actually did sit down, and they sat down for 2 days. They had long meetings, and the Germans certainly said it was very successful. It's a modest agreement that they both signed. The statement is a modest statement. But the reality is, Dr. Paul, as you know, that's what diplomacy is. You tiptoe in the water. You sort of develop some trust between the two sides. And so I'll just say the two of the main goals of the statement that was released: reducing civilian casualties, stopping attacks on religious centers, schools, hospitals, educational centers, bazaars, water dams, and workplaces. That's the first. And the second one is significant too. And there are others, but these are the two most significant. Assurances of women's rights in political, social, economic, educational, and cultural affairs in the context of Islamic values. So that sounds like a compromise between the two as well. So it's off to a good start,
Well, the emotions run high, and there's been an explanation on how the different groups align themselves, because the Afghans see the Taliban as proxies for Pakistan.
Yeah.
So there's outside interference. Of course, the Taliban sees Afghanistan as a proxy for the United States.
Puppets,
and
yeah.
We are still very much involved, and I'm sure Pakistan is very interested in this. But like you say, right now, it looks like the people themselves are talking, and we actually, you know, think it was beneficial when there was a little bit of push with the South Korean political leaders to talk to the North Koreans. And so they get support at the grassroots level, and that moves in the right direction, as our argument has always been. There's a lot of fighting going on, and right now, actually, you know, when you think about Venezuela, I think we're sort of, the mainstream media is starting to endorse this idea that maybe the Venezuelans will just have to handle this themselves because the coup didn't work.
Yeah.
So this is the thing, and that's the way it should be done morally. I think it's the most practical thing to do, even though there might be one side slightly better than the other. And of course, the big danger of not picking a side is that means that we're endorsing one side over the other. But this is a sign that the people in Afghanistan are sick and tired of it. They're running out of energy.
Yeah.
And I think there was also some hint there that the Taliban has reformed some of their viewpoint on the way they treat women and others. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but that certainly would help bring the two sides together.
Yeah, it would. And I think this agreement that they've made, modest as it is, could help. But the U.S. is not opposing these talks. It's pushing these talks. Frankly, I think Trump needs a win, and this could be a win if there is such a win in such a ridiculous war, but it certainly would look good. He said last week he's going to leave a lot of intelligence in there if we get out. But, you know, this is a two-track process, as we pointed out earlier on, and the U.S. talks with the Taliban will resume today. So they're happening in the same country, separate places. So the U.S. is talking with the Taliban. This is the U.S. envoy for Afghanistan characterized the talks with the Taliban so far. These 6 days, this is the last round of talks they had, have been the most productive of the rounds we've had with the Taliban. So it's a very significant move on both parts, and perhaps the two may come together.
You know, and if that is the case, I think the next best thing that Trump has to consider, and maybe we can send in a donation, we need to get a ticket for Bolton to go to Siberia.
Yeah, you know, not Mongolia, Siberia.
Mongolia, yeah. Well, either one would do. Just get him out of the way. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, this part of the world and this squabble that's going on brings back memories for me, because I remember very clearly it was probably in 1964, I bet, and I was flying with the Air Force, and we were making many stops, and we had a stop in Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
and we stopped at Peshawar, which is not too far from Khyber Pass. But the many other Air Force officers had been there many times, but they were sort of showing me around what was going on in that part of the world and explaining to me how the mountains, which you couldn't see anything, they said the tribes were up there and they've been there and they've never been conquered. So it was a picture I was seeing, and I can still picture those mountains. But we went right up to the Khyber Pass, and we were on a ridge, and we could look down at the key point, mm-hmm. east meets west, because we were positive with Pakistan, and Afghanistan was with Soviets,
yeah.
And so it was a hot part of the Cold War. But the lesson I learned, even in one of the hottest spots in the Cold War, that if you wanted to do business, right there was a very good place to do business and trade goods, because they had an underground cave which was like a giant store.
Wow.
And they were exchanging goods and services and milling around. It was underneath in the ground. And yet, I don't know what the West or the Soviets would be trading, but maybe they were selling vodka or something. But they were getting American goods. And I kept thinking, you know, all that fighting and stuff above us, you know, fighting and fuming, you know, when the people get together, all they want to do is trade and get along, and they were doing fine. But another image I remember so well about this visit was we were on this ridge, we could look down at the entry point, and a single woman was walking by herself with a little bit of a little satchel, and it was like nobody noticed her. There were no guards. Nobody talked to her, and she just walks right through. And somebody made a comment to me. They said, the one thing is that in this part of the world, the women are respected, and she is perfectly safe. Now, whether that's a historic statement, or whether there's exception to this. But anyway, under those circumstances, one thing is the trade continued, and respect for women to a large degree was much better than the way some of that part of the world lives. But anyway, I think of that, and yet there's still, you know, the problems going on there. And let's just hope these talks are beneficial. But I do think that we have to follow through and get out, because they're based on the fact that they're anticipating that we have planned to get out. And that, of course, is very important. But the other thing is there's still commercial interests involved there. And there's, you know, even when we leave, we don't leave.
Yeah.
You know, where is the largest embassy in the world in Iraq?
Yeah, you exactly.
Know? So we're very much involved.
Well, that's such a great story and a great point, because trade does bring people together. You know, it's if people understand the market is simply those people in the cave.
Yeah.
The market economy is those people in the cave trading goods and services. But the two, at least at this point, seemingly intractable points between the two is that the U.S. demands a ceasefire. They want the Taliban to stop bombing things and shooting people, and the Taliban are demanding a timetable for U.S. withdrawal. Probably, it seems to me like one could follow the other. If the U.S. would say, listen, we're getting out, the Taliban could, they wouldn't have anything to shoot anyway. They'd want to get rid of it. So it seems like there's some movement in those two main areas. And, you know, as you started out by saying you get exhausted, you almost think like you've forgotten what you're fighting for. What is the U.S. fighting for in Afghanistan? I mean, I honestly, we've been following it for a long time. I honestly couldn't really tell you what they're fighting for. And what's interesting is I don't think most Americans do. You remember at the Democratic debates that first night a couple weeks ago, when Tim Ryan, running for president, was going on about how the Taliban attacked us on 9/11, it took Tulsi Gabbard to remind him, or to maybe tell him for the first time, those weren't the guys who attacked us. In fact, they live in caves. They're not going to attack us. That's the last thing they care about in their entire lives.
Oh, you know, not very good historians. They probably went to public schools, watch and talk like that. But I know where there's a good history course.
Exactly, exactly.
Happens to be in homeschooling. But you know, these problems aren't that complex, and you restated the point I was trying to make, and that is when people trade and talk with each other, people get along a lot better. But you know, the rules for people to get along are not complicated, and to me, it fits my personal philosophy, my religious beliefs, as well as my political beliefs, is just accepting the idea that you're not allowed to initiate force against other people to have your way. Live and let live. And that's that doesn't sound that complicated. But then human emotions of greed and attitude and power and psychopathy, the psychopaths that want to take over, this sort of thing. But if I don't think the Taliban wants to, and you already made the point, they don't want to run the world. They didn't invade us, you know, and they're not going to do it. Matter of fact, Saddam Hussein wasn't even planning on invading us.
Uh-huh.
But that's what they said. You know, he was part of it, and yet the hint was that maybe Saudi Arabia was involved in this, and you know, even the Congress came around to allowing the suing of the Saudi government over loss of life on 9/11, which always really is an amazing event because it was unanimous.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Isn't that an acknowledgement? Do you think that it wasn't the Taliban?
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, you know, you might ask, well, what's in it for us? What's in it for us, really? But think about this. You know, Brown University's Cost of War Project, we've gone to that quite a bit to look at their great research. So they just had something out. The cost through fiscal year 2019, the U.S. has spent or obligated to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan wars, $5.9 trillion. $5.9 trillion through fiscal year 2019. This seems to me like something that the left and right can get together and agree on. May not agree on what to do with that money, but we can certainly agree not to spend it on blowing stuff up. And that's our main goal, is to get America to stop blowing things up, and that's why we're having a conference in D.C. on August 24th that you can get your tickets to on the Ron Paul Institute website. But I also want to talk about something that we're really excited about is our special program project for students. I talked about it a little bit yesterday about how important this is to bring together. This is Dr. Paul's mission all along, to bring together young people. You saw the crowds at the universities. Bring together young people to start training the next generation, the cadres who are fighting for peace and prosperity. If you go to the Ron Paul Institute website, ronpaulinstitute.org, you'll see a hot link up there, right there. Students, apply to the Ron Paul Scholars Seminar. Super easy application right there, short application. We're running out of time. We have a couple slots left. We want to have you join us. We have some scholarships available, so you don't have to be out of pocket to come spend a day with some great speakers, learn a lot about U.S. foreign policy, and start talking about non-interventionism as a valid perspective on U.S. foreign policy. So we want to see you there. Make your application today. Don't delay.
Very good. I want to follow up on your earlier point about the amount of money that has been spent. The money is very important, but it's probably secondary to some other expenses, loss of limb, loss of life, but also loss of our liberties, because immediately, we had TSA introduced, and that was maybe the first week or two, and that was to expand the government and produce an organization the biggest we've ever had in this country, and it still exists. So the first thing that our government did was not to figure out who did what and why, and think about the ramifications. They made it made our country less free, and there was an attack on personal liberty of all Americans. So that, to me, is the greatest threat. So therefore, the best thing that we can do to prevent problems like this is to emphasize the principles of liberty, because when people are free, they're not being dictated on a daily basis how to live and how to spend their money and where to go and where to move around, and they then are more likely to get along with people. But no, when government takes over and they dictate, and there's always a monster out there. If there isn't one, they'll create one. There's always a Hitler. We're still fighting a Hitler somewhere along the way. And they'll come and go, but they always have to have an excuse. And there are strong motivations from very many sources. One, of course, are the people who profit from this. The politicians profit, but what about the people who finance the war? Daniel points out the trillions of dollars that were spent. But somebody else said, yeah, but look at the stock prices of all the companies that build weapons in this country. And we got to protect that because that's good for jobs. Yeah, I think we should do something good for jobs. I'll tell you what, if every individual American had something to say about it, that money would be spent on something else. They'd probably be spending it on homes right now. Young people can't even buy homes because of the maldistribution of wealth. And this comes as a consequence of the philosophy that we have. So the emphasis is in the wrong place. The emphasis has to be on the principles of liberty, because you have to have trust and faith in individuals to take care of themselves because they have a self-interest, which they should have. But no, the people I met were quite frank very often that the people are too dumb. They won't take care of themselves. And we have to have these smart progressives, these cultural Marxists to tell you how to live and how to spend your money, because the people just don't know how to do it. And just look at all the pain and suffering around the world throughout history, because there was always some authoritarian who knew what was best. Does that mean under a situation where you have respect for civil liberties and liberties of the individual, it'll be perfect? No, far from it. But I'll tell you what, it would be a lot nicer place to live. It would be a lot wealthier. It would be a lot safer. I think those should be our goals in life. And this is one reason why we have our program, to promote peace and prosperity for the entire world. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.